Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner Entertainment Company. The laces on a pair of steel-capped boots are pulled tight. Warner Brothers presents. A montage of images, including a birth certificate, fingerprints, and a passport. An Arnold Coppelson production. A Charles Russell film. Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. A shotgun is loaded. Film title, Eraser. A birth certificate goes up in flames while an unseen man winds a length of rope. James Caan. An address in New York. Vanessa Williams, James Coburn. And Robert Pastorelli. With James Cromwell, Danny Nucci, Andy Romano, Nick Chinland, Jerry Becker. A surgical glove is slipped onto a hand, and a lever on the side of a watch is pushed up. The shadow of the barrel of a gun is cast on a bulletproof vest. Small sections of documents flash up for a fraction of a second at a time. The words blood type are briefly discernible. Music composed and conducted by Alan Silvestri. Liquid is decanted into a small bottle. Story by Tony Perrier, Waylon Green, and Michael S. Chernuchin. A gun is loaded. A silver badge has the word Marshall printed on it in blue. Produced by Arnold Coppelson and Anne Coppelson. Directed by Charles Russell. The unseen man pulls on a balaclava. Now, it's nighttime. In a small house on a residential street, a man is being beaten up.
You couldn't hide, Johnny. Nobody hides from us.
The front door creaks open, and the man's accomplice goes to investigate. Suddenly, a thin length of wire drops from above, and he's lifted off his feet.
Stewie, quick!
Sure, Johnny, but first, Mr. Kennelly wants a little souvenir.
Open up! Open up!
They can take it to the trial. Open up, Johnny. Open up!
The balaclava man takes out another accomplice.
Benny?
Benny's head is slammed in the fridge.
Hello?
The two remaining men see the balaclavaed assassin and take out their guns, but he moves too fast for them and they're both shot. The man takes off his mask and looks down at Johnny.
Close the eyes.
Who are you?
Shut up.
The assassin pours a sticky blood-like mixture on Johnny's chest.
You too.
It's okay. You do what he says.
Don't move. You're dead.
The man takes photographs of the couple.
I need the clothes you're wearing, and your ring, your watch. All the IDs. Now.
Shh. Do it.
He pulls Johnny into a sitting position.
You come with me.
The man hauls bodies out the back of a car. They're in body bags marked County Morgue.
Grab the other one. Let's go.
Johnny looks uncertain, but shoulders one of the bags. Back inside, they're placed in the positions previously occupied by him and his partner, then unzipped. The cold, decaying cadavers inside look surprisingly similar to the couple.
Put your clothes on them. Move!
The assassin carries the bodies of the henchmen out onto the front lawn, then tucks photographs of the couple's supposedly dead bodies in one of their jacket pockets. He shoots one of the men in the back, then places the gun in the other henchman's hand before taking out a cell phone.
Yes, there's been a murder at 232 Alton Drive.
Send the police.
What are you doing?
They killed you, then they turn on each other.
Right. Sons of bitches.
Back inside the house, the man is emptying liquid from a jerry can.
Shit!
Don't worry, this doesn't work without an audience.
Outside, let's go.
He zips another of the henchmen up in a body bag. Then, he lights a match and ignites the flammable liquid, liberally spread around the room, before hurrying to his car. As the building erupts into flames behind them, the couple leap into the waiting station wagon. The man tosses the body in the back, then jumps into the driver's seat, and rapidly turns the car on the road. The police arrive just as they're driving away.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Anything you ever need, anything. You deserve me.
Endangered your life and the lives of U.S. Marshals assigned to protect you.
What are you talking about?
You were spotted at the restaurant in your neighborhood.
You think that's it, Janelle? Johnny!
The next time you're dead, this only happens once.
He drives the car onto a deserted wasteland near the bridge.
Get out.
The couple get out. Then the man fixes a wooden pole against the accelerator, flooring it. He leans through the window and turns the steering wheel, and the car surges forward, flying into the nearby river.
What are you doing? I was all right.
A van.
Let's go. Come. You'll never see me again, but I'll know every move you make.
Use your head, lie low, and I promise no one will hurt you.
If you try to skip out on your testimony, I deliver you to the Connelly family myself. I promise.
Hey, listen, man, look, I owe you big time. I'm a stand-up guy, you got it? You ever need anything, anything, you let me know, huh? Hey, what's your name?
Easy, honey, I don't think he wants to be pen pals.
Smile. You've just been erased.
Now the assassin is walking along a rain-soaked sidewalk, wearing a long fawn-colored trench coat, black shirt and trousers. He enters the Department of Justice building. Moments later, he steps out of the elevator, on a floor dedicated to the Witness Security Protection Program. He shows his pass, and a security door bearing the badges of the United States Marshal opens.
Hey, John, would you look at something? One of these is from our shop, and the others are the real deal. What do you think?
The assassin, John, runs his fingers down three ID cards.
That's the fake.
Who the hell was that?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. Now shut up and run this again.
Now the words Witness Security Protection Program appear on a computer screen, followed by a list of names. John clicks on a highlighted bar, bringing up a photograph of the dead body substituted for Johnny, then a picture of Johnny himself. Under the subject Castiglione John, he types the name Coulter Hugh alongside the word alias. He presses a button marked dental, then swaps the two men's records over. He then selects a button marked load record. An older man comes round the corner, carrying a mug, and watches him.
And so, with a little sleight of hand, one very dead John Doe trades places with one very live scumbag.
Robert, sit down.
John. You know, if God was as forgiving as Witsec, hell would be one empty joint, no?
God doesn't have our court system.
So, I understand you had a busy night.
A couple of witnesses could kill us.
I see.
Had to defuse the situation.
Did that include breaking into the county morgue?
Well, someone once taught me that improvisation is the heart of fieldwork. I think it was you.
Those were the old days. You know, the weather's changed. Now you got every asshole in Congress, you know, down our backs. I'm just telling you to walk softly, John.
Now, is that what Bella called me in? Because of the morgue?
Oh, no, man, no. The old man doesn't know anything about that, and personally, I don't think he has to. Shadow Ops still has some privileges.
You're right.
on John. It's good work.
I had a good teacher.
Bullshit. You had the best.
$14,640-some-odd people under Putsec protection, and not one with a profile like this.
They're bad.
They're good. This young lady, Miss Cullen, is a real-life, bona fide, honest person.
Then why does she need us?
She's a senior executive at Cyberis Corporation. Ever hear of it?
You're major defense contractors.
Mostly top-secret weapons research. Looks like someone inside Cyres is selling out, Uncle Sam. Feds need her to prove their case. If they do, she'll be the key witness in the hottest scandal since Iran-Contra.
When does this go down?
Tomorrow. The sting's all in place. Soon as it's over, she's all yours. Sealed file on relocate, your eyes only.
As usual, only you and I'll be privy to your witness's exact location.
But, John, there's some serious players here in Washington that could be badly burned.
John looks at a photo of an attractive woman.
And so could she.
Now, the woman, Lee Cullens, is walking along a sidewalk, looking a little apprehensive. She's wearing a tight-fitted suit and has her hair swept back. She enters a building with a helicopter hovering over the roof.
Welcome to Cyres Corporation. All visitors are required to step through the security stations on the right.
She steps into an elevator, then enters an outer office.
Morning, Dave.
Morning.
She takes some paperwork from her assistant and makes her way into a private office.
She's in. She giving us anything yet?
Not yet.
A surveillance team.
That's right, Lee. We're right here with you.
She gets up from her desk and goes to stand in front of a mirror. She tips an earpiece out of a container and puts it in, then traces a wire from a brooch on her jacket to a pack in her waistband, which she turns on.
We're on.
Can you hear me?
We hear you, Lee.
I look okay?
Tell us you look great.
Not bad, Miss Cullen.
Not bad for an amateur.
We're right with you, Lee.
Let's do it.
Now, security guards are visible in her secret camera footage.
Good morning, Miss Cullen.
Good morning.
Station C?
Yes.
And how long today?
10 minutes, max.
Okay.
A security door opens, and Lee walks down a white, sparse corridor, flanked by rooms filled with banks of computers and experimental equipment. The surveillance team can see the footage.
Doing just fine, Lee.
She steps off the main corridor and puts her pass into a reader, then opens a door marked B, maximum security. She taps a code into a door panel.
Let's hope we bought the right combination, gentlemen.
Bingo!
They lose the camera connection.
It's okay, it's okay. We lose transmission in the vault.
What do we do now?
Now we wait. She better move fast, because she's only got 5 minutes till the shift change.
Lee walks through the secure room and takes a seat in front of a computer. She reaches into her bag and pulls out a mini compact disc, which she then puts into the hard drive. Then she types the code CYXDEF1000 into the computer to start it copying files. She looks nervous as the enormous server in front of her whirs into action. Revolving arms spin round and she types in an authorized access code. Streams of numbers scroll up on the screen as the copy procedure begins. The computerized schematics of a weapon appears on the monitor. Lee checks her watch, then looks at a clock on the wall. It's just turned 10:25.
What's taking so long?
Come on, sweetheart. You've got 2 minutes left.
The copy procedure is complete, and Lee takes the disk out of the hard drive and puts it into a case. She looks at her watch and the clock again. It's now 10:26. Moving quickly, she gets hold of another disk and puts it into the drive before repeating the copying. As the revolving arm turns again, her fingers twitch anxiously. The prototype gun appears on the screen. One of the surveillance team.
We should have never used it.
Shit!
She's out of time.
The copy procedure is complete. Lee hurriedly takes the disc out of the drive, then puts it into a silver face powder compact case. She puts it and the other disc into her bag, along with a slip of paper. She leaves the room, and the camera connection is re-established.
Hey!
Yes. Welcome back, Lee. We're right here with you.
The large door at the end of the corridor opens, and a security guard steps into Lee's path.
Miss Cullen, Mr. Donahue's office called. He'd like to see you.
Tell him I'll be up in a minute.
He said right now.
What's going on?
I think they made us.
Lee looks anxious, but keeps her cool. She steps into an elevator with a guard, and the doors close.
Check the directory. I want to know where Donahue's office is.
25th floor.
I know where it is. 25th floor. Get back up, ready to roll. This whole thing could go south.
What is it, William?
William turns on a video. It's footage of Lee.
That's someone I trusted for 5 years. Someone I told others could be trusted.
Well, I was pulling the staff.
Don't! We're way beyond bullshit here.
He stands up and straightens his tie. Lee looks fearful.
Who are you working for?
Shit, we're dead.
I should ask you that question. I used to think it was for the United States government.
Oh, come on, Lee. What do you think we do here? This isn't the Red Cross. We make weapons. Things that kill people. If the government isn't willing to pay the price for them, it's my job to find somebody who will.
I didn't know treason was part of the corporate strategy.
I asked who you were working for. You didn't tell me.
My God. Holy shit.
William removes her brooch and pack.
Christ.
Get her out of there. Get her out of there now!
What is this? A camera?
He throws it onto his desk, then slumps in his leather chair.
I'm working for the FBI, William. They heard everything you just said. They're watching us right now.
And you think that makes you safe?
He takes out a handgun from his desk drawer.
How could you do this?
Pointing it at her, he cocks the weapon.
I hope you understand, Lee. So you leave me no choice.
He puts the gun in his mouth and blows the back of his head off. People run in and start screaming. Lee leaves, looking horrified.
Welcome to Cyrus Corporation. All visitors are required to step
through
security stations on the right.
Security?
Wait a minute! Stop her!
Lee bolts out of the building and is scooped up by one of the surveillance team, then bundled into the back of the van. Now the compact disc.
Our hard evidence. It's all yours, gentlemen.
We've handled these types of situations before.
You still haven't answered my question.
We told you there'd be risks.
You also told me I would be under complete protection the entire time.
The operation didn't go as smoothly as we anticipated.
I'd say that's an understatement.
Remember, Miss Cullen, you came to us.
I came to you with a clerical error. You asked for my help.
And we got it. If Cyrus is selling weapons technology, that's high treason. This disc and your testimony will help us put them and their co-conspirators behind bars. You've done a great service for your country, Miss Cullen. Now it's time to think about your safety.
They look towards a rising elevator. John steps into the room.
This is U.S. Marshal John Krueger with the Witness Protection Program. He'll be handling your personal security.
My protection?
Your new identity, relocation. I'll take you through it step by step.
What are you talking about? I'm not going anywhere.
You're in an extremely high-risk situation, Miss Cullen. That should have been explained to you.
Your boss was just a middleman, Lee. There are other more dangerous people involved.
So, you expect me to what, give up my whole life over this?
Just until the trial. And then you're gonna be completely out of danger.
And how do you know that, huh? How do you know anything?
Miss Cullen.
Now look, I will keep up my end of the bargain. I will testify. But that's it. I'm going home.
She leaves, and John gives the FBI team a stern look.
Put people on her right away. We'll need a seance to get her testimony.
Who brought her into this?
She volunteered. She had security clearance. We had a code to the vault, so...
You told her it's a walk in the park. And she finds out that her life isn't her own anymore. It's too late.
We had no case without her.
Right. It's a lot easier to put her ass on the line than yours, isn't it?
Two of the surveillance team enter the J. Edgar Hoover FBI building.
Sully!
Pretty out. How you doing?
Good.
Have a little something for you? Let's see what you got.
A man behind a wire mesh accepts a brown envelope, then signs a piece of paper.
Your seat.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure.
The surveillance team leave, and the clerk heads into a back office. Working quickly and secretly, he opens a compact disc case and takes out the disc, revealing a smaller one underneath. He opens the envelope the man gave him and swaps the contents for the hidden disc. Then he puts the stolen Cyrus copy on his desk and picks up the phone.
It's me. Your music has arrived.
He hangs up. Now it's nighttime. Lee drives her 4x4 up the driveway of a large house and parks. She gets out and hurries to her front door, looking around warily. In a car parked across the street sit two men, one of whom is smoking. Both of them are watching her closely. Lee lets herself in and closes the door behind her, then puts her handbag down on a table. She takes out the makeup case and tips the compact disc into her hand. A little later, she's sitting in front of her home computer. She starts to load up the contents of the disc, a total of 9,998 data files. She types something in, then a warning comes up reading, "Unable to run program. Use restricted to dedicated systems."
Get Mr. Morehart down here immediately.
Elsewhere, a man is having the same problem as Lee. She tries to bring up the software, but it's indecipherable. Another warning reads, "Hardware decryption required." Looking exasperated, she takes the disc out of the computer, then walks over to a phone.
Hello?
It's me.
Lee? Jesus, I heard about Donahue. Are you okay?
I'm fine. You're right, I shouldn't have trusted them.
Of course not. The feds are idiots. They'll either blow the case or bury it.
Lee? The feds are here now. They're watching me.
You let me write this story, and I will nail Cyrus all over the front page.
It may not be safe to talk on this phone.
The agents in the car are dead, and men in black are watching the house.
I'll call you later.
Wait, did you make a copy?
Yeah.
That's your insurance, Lee. You go public, and they won't dare touch you. Lee? Lee, what's wrong?
I don't know. I gotta go.
Lee hangs up and looks at the stairs fearfully. A man comes down them.
Hi, baby.
Daryl, what the hell are you doing here?
Been waiting for you. I was just getting cleaned up. How you doing?
So what? You just let yourself into my house, huh?
I've been worried about you, that's all. You know, I haven't heard from you in days.
Well, there's nothing left to talk about. It's over. And you know that.
Outside, one of the mysterious men in black puts a huge weapon in place and connects it to a pack attached to his waist. Red bars appear on the side of the gun as it charges up. A thermal camera penetrates the walls of the house.
Come on, Lee. That doesn't hurt you to say that?
It hurt me 3 months ago. But after the phone calls, after the notes on my car, and tonight, believe me, it's getting a lot easier.
The man outside shifts the focus of his X-ray camera and turns it on Lee. She appears as a skeleton. As she swallows a drink, the liquid is clearly visible traveling down her gullet. The man zooms in on her beating heart and takes aim, but a colleague stops him when a van turns onto the road.
Get down.
They duck as the van parks up. One of the men has long curly hair. The other has a disfiguring scar near his eye. A man wearing a jacket with "Let's Party" written on the back carries a big bunch of balloons towards Lee's house.
You're seeing someone, aren't you?
Oh, come on, Daryl.
I know you're seeing somebody. Let's see who that is.
Daryl.
Oh, what's this? And a card!
Get down!
John grabs Lee, but Daryl gets the full force of a huge electrical bolt in his chest.
Oh, shit! Go, 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 go!
The curly-haired man keeps firing the car with a weapon, but John and Lee manage to stay just ahead. John gets over the bridge, and they dash behind it.
Come here. Stay down.
The gun's sight is reflected on the wall behind them, but is unable to penetrate through the fridge.
I don't have a shot.
The scarred man gets out a different weapon, which fires a small oblong bomb at the kitchen. It mechanically opens, and John raises the fridge door just in time to save them from a barrage of sharp nails and screws. One of the screws has skewered his hand to the fridge door.
You go, go.
While the scarred man's team advances on the house, John yanks his hand off the door. As the armed men prepare to breach the property, John looks at the thermostat, then yanks out a gas pipe.
What are you doing?
Lighting a fuse.
He turns the thermostat up full and leaves the gas pipe pointing at its wiring before sneaking off through the kitchen. They duck out of sight of the curly-haired man. When the coast's clear, they move away and creep through the living room. Two other henchmen kick in the back door and come face to face with a curly-haired man in the kitchen. They see the gas pipe just as the electrical wiring starts to hiss and spark. The entire house explodes just as Lee and John are running down the front hall. They leap into the van and start driving away. The scarred man runs out of his vantage point and fires after them, shattering the rear and front windows.
Are you hit?
What?
Are you hurt? Are you bleeding?
I don't think so. Are they following us?
No. Just calm down. You're gonna be fine.
I'm not gonna be fine. Look, they just tried to kill me. And Daryl's dead.
Lee, you're alive, and I'll keep you that way.
His hand is bleeding.
Oh, my hand.
There's a first aid kit under your seat.
She gets it out.
That weapon, or whatever the hell it was from your company, it was from Cyrus, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's an EM prototype. It's not even supposed to exist.
EM?
Electromagnetic pulse. No gunpowder, no conventional bullets. They fire aluminum rounds at almost the speed of light.
You're talking about the railgun.
Yeah, that's another name for them.
The Navy has been working on it for years. The smallest one I've ever heard of is mounted in a battleship.
Cyrus is contracted to scale them down, to design a compact hypervelocity pulse weapon, the most powerful assault rifle on Earth. They took millions, then they said the physics were impossible.
It looked real enough to me. Maybe Cyrus found a higher bidder.
Well, they're connected everywhere. Defense, CIA, NSA, maybe even your people for all we know.
You still want to put them away?
Yes.
I'll hide here until the hearings. No one will know where. Not my boss, not Witzek, no one.
Can you do that?
The feds know this is going to be a death sentence for you. They let you walk right into it.
I'm stupid.
You trusted them, that's all. Now trust me.
Lee looks uncertain, but John is unwavering as he drives the van down a curving rain-soaked road. A man is on the phone to someone in government.
This is Morehart. We have a problem.
Go ahead, this line's secure.
The Cullen woman is still alive.
Are you serious?
It gets worse. She has a disc. She tried to access our program with it.
You have any idea the risk I took to get this back?
I know. She must have made a duplicate.
Then get it. Whatever it takes, get it.
Understood. One other thing. I checked her phone records.
And?
She called a woman named Isaacs, a reporter for the Washington Herald.
I see. I think you know what has to be done. Do it.
The Joint Chiefs are ready, Mr. Undersecretary.
Tell them I'll be right with them, Lieutenant. Thank you.
The lieutenant leaves the Undersecretary's office. Once he's gone, Daniel Harper snaps the compact disc he's holding in half. Now smoke drifts from the chimney of a pleasant-looking house. All Lee's ID cards are being doused by the flames.
That's it. That's everything I am.
No, that's nothing. It's a few numbers and some plastic. With your eyes in here, and no one can take that from you.
They're gonna try.
We'll stop them.
She smiles gratefully, then goes to sit on a sofa.
I need the rest.
That's all there is?
No, this.
This?
A pendant on a chain.
It's St. George. It's silly, but when I was a kid, I used to have these nightmares about dragons, so...
He watched over you?
Yeah.
What is my job now?
She bites her lip and looks up at him.
Get some sleep. You leave at dawn.
Okay.
Night.
He walks away and she picks up a blanket. Now it's daytime, and they're in a car traveling on a freeway. Smoke drifts past as they walk into New York's Chinatown.
It's a place I know where it's easy to disappear.
A woman greets John.
There's a woman there I've helped before. She testified against the Yakuza bosses in San Francisco. Her new name is Mei Ling. You'll be safe with her until the hearings.
Now in Mei Ling's apartment, John is transferring new data onto ID and credit cards. He takes them over to Lee.
Your new name is Deborah Elliott.
Is that how you think of me, as a Deborah?
I don't know. I guess I could have used something more fun, like Debbie? Deb?
Deborah's fine.
I gave you AAA credit.
What's my limit?
No, it's not a license to shop. I want you to lay low right now. Mei-Ling will take good care of you. Okay? You know the signal.
911, I get out of the apartment.
Remember, go straight to the payphone and wait for my call. Anything happens, it's a public place. It's six exits and six ways out. One more thing. I work alone. If anyone comes to you and claims that I sent them, use this. All you have to do is pull the trigger.
I guess I won't see you again.
If everything goes well, no.
Well, at least not until the trial.
They share a smile.
Thanks.
Thank me when it's over.
She looks down at the gun in her hand thoughtfully. Now she's in the kitchen while a world news update is running on the TV.
Undersecretary of Defense Daniel Harper spoke before Congress today about the controversial CSIRES scandal.
The use of private contractors is totally within the parameters of Defense Department spending. I look forward to the CSIRES hearing, and I'm absolutely confident that we will be vindicated of any mismanagement of funds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Now John is sitting in a restaurant. He notices two men at a table nearby, one of whom seems to be keeping a close eye on him. Robert walks in and joins him.
Hey, Jack.
Thanks for coming.
Listen, you know I don't like meeting outside of our normal channels.
It's not my choice.
Are they with you?
Yeah.
Robert waves to the men, who look a little sheepish.
Whether I like it or not, listen, John, we got a serious problem.
What's going on?
Someone's been murdering our witnesses. We've had three confirmed kills in the last 48 hours.
Who?
Not one of yours, not one of mine, not yet, anyway.
Did they break cover?
No. No, that is the problem. And there's no way anyone could know all three their locations.
John nods, frowning solemnly.
There's some more inside Witzig.
Bella thinks so. He may be right. Yeah, all three singers were witnesses in some high-profile federal cases, all with international ties. That's our common threat.
There are other singers that fit the profile.
Six to be exact. One of them's yours, and one of them's mine. So we have to live contact and replant them immediately. The jet is fueling as we speak.
I work alone. You know that.
Not today. Bella's orders. Buddy systems, CIA escorts, three teams, and we're one of them.
Fine. We do yours first.
Now two cars with blacked-out windows drive onto an airfield and stop close to a plane.
Gentlemen, this is John Kruger. John?
He's our agent Schiff and Calderon, I forgot which is which.
Well, I'm Schiff.
Yeah, I'm Calderon. You know her?
Should I?
She was a reporter doing a piece on CSIRES. There could be a connection with your witness.
Did someone take her out?
Peeled her like an onion. If she knew anything, she talked.
Oh, John, this here is Deputy Monroe. He's one of ours. Monroe? You're looking at a legend. This is Mr. John Kruger.
Deputy?
Sir, it's a pleasure.
John and his colleagues walk onto the plane.
Nice rigs. How many of these you got?
Three. In different parts of the country. Handy for quick relocates. Sometimes we run violent felons for the feds.
Chauffeurs for degenerates. Don't you ever get tired of babysitting scum?
Yeah. But in your case, make an exception.
Who the hell does this guy think he is?
Him? Well, he thinks he's the best guy in the game.
I think he's right. Try not to piss him off, okay?
Calderon looks a little put out. Now the plane takes off. In Woodland, John slides a small blade into his belt buckle, then loads cartridges into a shotgun.
Guys, you're east, you're west, you're north, here. We got the boathouse, the garage, the back door.
We take the front entrance?
You and me, old buddy. Look, I don't feel like getting shot today, boy, so keep your goddamn safeties on. We're probably gonna find her inside the bacon muffins.
Now, this is my witness. Her name is Allison. She's a very, very nice lady.
So let's bring her out safely, gentlemen.
Here you go.
A photo of a blonde.
Let's go, big guy.
The team make their way down a slope, illuminated by beams of sunlight, then go their separate ways. John feels a car bonnet.
The engine's still warm.
He and Robert cross a stream, then advance on a log cabin. They stop either side of the front door with their guns at the ready. After noticing that a pane of glass in the door is broken, Robert nods and John opens the door with his foot. They enter the house with their guns held out in front of them, alert and cautious. While John looks up the stairs, a gunman aims at his back, but is taken out by Robert. John gives him a grateful smile. Hearing the noise coming from upstairs, John signals that he's going to go up, and Robert peels off in the opposite direction. John treads carefully up the stairs, one hand holding his gun, the other raised defensively in front of him. Keeping his eyes peeled, he approaches a room where a gunman's hiding behind the door. John kicks it hard, stunning the man, before driving his hunting knife through the wood and into his chest. Then John takes out another man, who's sent flying backwards by the powerful gunshots. Investigating the muffled cries, Robert kicks open a door and finds a man holding Allison hostage.
You're late.
He kills the man with a single shot to the head. Another gunman comes up the stairs firing rapidly. John runs into a room. The gunman follows and sees that the window is broken. He peers out. Hanging from the doorframe, John kicks the man out through the window.
He won't hurt you anymore.
Robert shoots Allison in the stomach with her kidnapper's gun, then pretends to give her mouth to mouth.
She's hit. Get an ambulance. Come on. Sorry, honey.
He covers her nose and mouth, and she goes limp just as John arrives.
We lost her.
Why send five men to kill one woman?
Calderon slips a photo in the dead man's pocket.
They're waiting for us. We've been set up.
Calderon pretends to find the photo.
Is she yours?
It's a picture of Lee.
Yeah.
Call her now, John.
There are no phones. We have to live contact her.
Where is she?
Atlanta.
Okay, well, let's move then, huh?
As Robert and Calderon walk away, John narrows his eyes. On board the plane, he picks up a bottle of water. Robert tips him a friendly wink before he walks away.
Yeah, you like this better.
Robert gets Calderon a can of drink from the refrigerator. As John sips his water, Robert puts the ice bucket under the bar counter, then glances across at Monroe, who's working on a computer and seems a little distracted.
Right there, Monroe.
Yeah, I think so, sir.
First time on the fire?
Yeah.
It's okay to be shaky. Well, I'm shaky, right?
Thing is, sir, I don't know what I feel. I mean, it was terrible and all. But
exciting at the same time.
Yeah.
Hey, it's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, it's the most natural thing in the whole world. Tell him,
yeah. It's natural.
John walks through the plane sipping his water. Robert watches him with a wry smile.
Whole game's that way. It's like a drug. You get hooked, there's no turning back.
John's looking dizzy and disorientated. He stares at the bottle of water in his hand. Robert looks back at him with a knowing expression. Then John stumbles through the cabin and slumps into one of the seats. Robert turns to Monroe.
Now you take me. My old man. Little nobody in D.C. Nice, quiet guy. Anyway, on his deathbed, he tells me that all those years he was working for the CIA. I had to be part of that world. I joined the CIA a couple years, and here I am at Woodside.
John is sending a message to Lee's pager. She picks it up and reads it, then springs into action, stuffing some paperwork and the gun into her purse. On the plane, Robert perches on the arm of a seat across the aisle from John's.
Hey, buddy.
What about you, sir? Why did you join WITSEC? Sir, something wrong?
Well, answer the kid, John. Tell him.
Sir?
Come on, John.
John's vision has become distorted. John's eyes close and he passes out, dropping the bottle of water. Robert quickly takes John's gun out of his holster, picking it up with a handkerchief.
So what the hell's going on?
Robert picks up John's phone.
Shit, he cleared the numbers.
So what the hell's going on?
Quiet. Hey, did you capture that call?
Schiff zooms in on a picture of New York and Mei Ling's apartment.
Got it. New York prefix.
New York, don't change course.
I'll call WITSEC.
What? No, that won't be necessary.
So we're supposed to report any change in the flight plan.
Monroe. You did great work back there. Sit down. Did I give you an evaluation yet?
Evaluation?
Yeah. A+, kid. God damn it. Give me a wet nap or something, will you?
What do we have in New York? I have 4 or 5 guys we can trust. Get them ready.
Clean this mess up.
Lee has arrived at the New York City Zoo. She goes to the desk to pay her entrance fee. John slowly comes round, looking confused and wary. He glances out of the window. Then Robert approaches him.
Confused pal. New York.
You're off course.
No, we're not. You're gonna take us to it, John.
John reaches for his gun, but Robert has it in an evidence bag.
You did a very, very bad thing, John. You killed Monroe.
He throws the bag to Schiff.
Now that makes you the mole.
No. It makes you a murderer.
Calderon covers John's back.
I'm a businessman. Very, very serious businessman.
A businessman? Selling weapons with your old CIA pals, huh? Is it just the money? Or are you trying to start your own dirty little war somewhere?
Wars? Wars, John. I mean, wars, they come and go. What? We did Nam, we lost. We did the Gulf, we won. Hey. What changed, John? Nothing. Nothing ever does. The only difference is who gets rich and who gets dead. Personally, John, I prefer rich, huh?
You must be a very rich man by now.
You know, it doesn't have to end like this, John. I can make you part of it, a big part. All you have to do is give up the girl. What do you say?
Drop your gun.
What?
If you drop your gun now, I promise I won't kill you.
Robert looks back at Schiff.
I guess I'll have to take my chances, John.
John takes the knife from his belt and hurls it at Robert, who raises his arm and is stabbed. Then John turns and punches Calderon before opening the emergency exit, immediately causing air to rush through the depressurized cabin. Rapid gunfire is exchanged.
John! I can't believe you nailed me with this cheap piece of mail order shit!
John reaches up and yanks down an emergency parachute, then sees paper flying through the exit, straight into the plane's engines.
Think about it, John! You definitely go through the election through a noose!
You're right!
He pulls the stretcher off the wall and throws it out of the hatch. It flies into the engine, which immediately catches fire. John edges out of the hatch, then reaches back inside for the parachute. Robert fires off a shot, grazing John's hand and causes him to lose his grip. He ends up outside the plane, hanging onto the doorway by his fingertips. John uses all his strength to keep hold and manages to grab the parachute. Robert fires another shot and the chute is flung from his hand and tumbles away through the sky. Robert rattles off more shots, and John is forced to let go. He falls back, barely missing the burning engine, then spots the chute some distance away. In freefall, he forces his arms down by the side of his body and heads after it, moving like a bullet through the sky. He reaches the chute and struggles to pull on the straps while hurtling towards the ground at phenomenal speed. He plummets like a stone, but finally manages to secure the pack on his back. He pulls the cord and the chute unfurls. He rapidly ascends, then looks up with relief. Robert goes into the plane's cockpit.
Turn this thing around!
We got a mayday! I'm trying to keep us in the air!
You turn it around and take him out now!
The plane bangs deeply, black smoke pouring from the stricken engine. As John sees it arcing round towards him, a look of horror appears on his face.
All right. I want his face all over this windshield.
The plane is on a direct collision course with John, who's hovering helplessly in midair. With seconds to spare, John gets out his gun and starts firing at the windshield. Bullets penetrate the glass and the pilot is forced to change course, narrowly missing John, who's buffeted by the wind and aftershock. He tumbles over and over, becoming hopelessly entangled in his parachute silk. Seeing the ground getting ever nearer, he desperately tries to extricate himself from the silk and tangled rope. Realizing that his efforts are getting him nowhere, and with the Earth only a few hundred feet away, he releases the main chute and manages to activate the emergency. It unfurls at the last minute, and John smashes into the roof of the car in a junkyard. A dog and some children with bikes appear.
Oh, man, did that hurt? It had to hurt. I saw it.
Where is this?
Earth. Welcome.
A little later, John is packaging up his parachute silk.
Is that your daddy's truck?
Yeah.
Do you think he'd mind if I borrow it?
I don't know. Is this yours?
The silk.
Do you like it?
Oh, yeah.
What about the trade?
$50.
$50?
It's sunset when John drives the truck out of the junkyard. At an airport, the stricken plane is being hosed down. Robert is bandaging his wounded arm.
Shit. We traced the number to an apartment in Chinatown, but she was long gone.
No shit, Dick Tracy. That was a run signal. What do you got on the cab companies?
3 pickups of solo women in the vicinity within 15 minutes of the call.
Where were the drop-offs?
Madison and 53rd, 89th and Central Park West, and the New York City Zoo.
That's it.
The zoo?
That's it. First, they're unsignaled, then straight to a public meeting place. Listen, where are your shooters?
Standing by.
Good, get them. I want two teams to sweep from the north and the south. Let's go, now. Go!
Johnny's on the road. Seeing traffic in the tunnel up ahead, he rapidly changes to the other lane, driving into the flow of cars. He expertly weaves in and out of the oncoming vehicles with the amber light on his truck flashing. Now, at the zoo. As a tiger prowls in its cage, Lee steps forward and looks around nervously.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. The zoo will be closing in 10 minutes. Please proceed to the nearest exit.
Miss Cullen. It's all right, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Where's John Kruger?
He's on his way. He sent me to be sure you're safe until he gets here.
It's the man with the scar.
Really? Then he must have shown you the secret handshake.
What?
She shoots him in the thigh, then runs.
Shit! To Garrett!
Robert.
Yeah?
That bitch just shot me!
Run away. Take it down if you have to, but don't kill it, you hear me?
What's going on?
U.S. Marshal.
Close the gates, Alexis.
There's still people inside.
Well, fine, then get them out, now.
All right, let's go.
You two right here.
Ladies and gentlemen, please exit the zoo.
Please, let's go.
Let's go, let's go immediately. Police emergency.
Let's move it now. Move it.
Thank you.
John is still on the road, driving like a madman. Lee runs through the zoo, then sees the flashing police lights at the gates and Robert's men entering the compound. She backs up against a cage.
Come on!
Having been alerted to her position by the shrieking monkeys, Robert and his men set off in pursuit. John drives towards the zoo, stuck in a hail of bullets. She smashes through the closed gates and slams into a tree. Robert and his men immediately pepper the truck with gunfire. One of them opens the cab door and finds the front seat completely empty.
He's here.
They all look around nervously. Lee runs into the reptile house, where a large creature with sharp claws is floating in an eerily lit water tank. Two of Robert's men batter at the locked doors. As they start to smash through the glass panes, Lee runs, but the next door she tries is locked. The two men burst in, firing indiscriminately, and Lee manages to get a couple of shots off herself.
Doesn't have to be like this. Just drop your weapon.
She fires off two shots and tries to make a run for it, but is forced back behind a wall. When she tries to fire again, she realizes she's out of ammo.
Go, move, go!
A back door bursts open, and John hurtles in, immediately taking out one of the gunmen.
You're late.
Traffic.
More of Robert's men come in.
Where's your ammo?
I'm out.
Damn it. 2 rounds left. Move! Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Stay down. When I tell you, head for the door. Go.
Robert's men advance cautiously. John watches them carefully, then fires one shot, shattering the glass of a large water tank. The henchmen are engulfed by the torrent of water, which contains a collection of enormous alligators. A pair of enormous claws clamp down on one man, who flung about like a rag doll. Another man sees a gator approach him, but his head is crushed by a predator from behind.
Let's go.
The henchman stands up to fire after them, but he took them out on the enormous beast.
Come
Robert and then block their exit. After narrowly avoiding being caught in the Vader's snapping jaws, John takes it on, but it manages to knock the gun from his hand with its swimming tail. John picks up and hurls a lectern at the creature, which crunches through it with its powerful jaws. John crawls away, but the Vader hasn't finished with him yet and sets off in pursuit. In the nick of time, John picks up his gun and fires, instantly killing the massive reptile.
Your luggage.
Robert and his men rush in to discover their path blocked by the alligators. He spots John and Lee and fires at them, but his bullets aid their escape by smashing through a window, which the couple then tumble through. Later, a police helicopter hovers above the zoo, and a dozen cars are parked at the gates. Robert walking with Chief Bella.
So how many casualties?
Total, three of my men. Kruger took them out like that cold.
I can't believe this.
Yeah, well, there's prints all over the weapon.
Ren prints on him already? That's moving fast, Robert.
Hey, I was there. I saw it.
Doesn't make sense. Why would he do a thing like this?
Look, the man has no family. He has no friends. He has nothing to keep him honest. He's been bought.
I've known John for years, for Christ's sake.
We're losing time. I mean, if he is innocent, you tell me why he's on the run.
What about his witness?
She's in it with him.
What the hell do you mean?
Hey, we approached her. We identified ourselves. She shot one of my men.
All right, fine. Do whatever it takes. You bring him in. But Robert.
Sir.
You bring him in alive.
Bella walks away, and Robert turns to a passing police officer.
Hey, Captain.
Sir.
Why don't you put out a citywide APB?
I want this town locked up so tight it'll make his balls ache.
Robert takes a drag on a cigarette before walking away. Then, squad cars with flashing lights speed past a large and imposing church. John leans over the parapet at the very top, then taps numbers on his cell phone. In the police helicopter, Bella answers the call.
Bella, here.
Captain.
John, where are you?
De Guerin is the mole. He's after my witness. He's killed the others just to flash her out.
You have to come in.
I have to protect my witness.
John, you're the one that's putting her in danger. You could both end up dead.
De Guerin has been bought. My witness knows too much.
I've got federal agents that say you are the shooter.
John!
I'll call you back.
When?
When I have proof.
Both men hang up. Then John shakes his head regretfully.
Gone too far. We're on our own.
What are we gonna do?
We can't stand around for long. We need some hard evidence.
Lee turns and walks away.
Lee?
She takes the spare compact disc out of her case, then turns to show him.
You kept a copy.
I was supposed to give it to a friend of mine. She's a reporter at the Washington Herald. She asked
Lee Isaacs?
How'd you know?
Lee, she's dead. They killed her.
But there's no way they could have known about her. I mean, I didn't tell anyone.
No, it's not your fault. They probably tapped her phone. I mean, there's many ways. Everything's gonna be all right, okay?
I was just trying to cover myself, that's all. I didn't know who I could trust. Now I'm gonna get us both killed.
No. This may be the only thing that keeps us alive.
I don't even know what's on that.
You have to find out.
I've tried. It's completely hacker-proof. There's no way to run it outside Cyrus.
Then you run it from the inside.
John, that place is like a fortress. We can't go back there. They'd expect that.
I hate to disappoint them.
John? Streets are clear. The police have returned to the safety of their donut shops.
Lee, this is Father Rodriguez.
Hi.
Pleasure. Of course, I was not always Father Rodriguez. You could say I was born again, with a little help from our friend here.
Some of his Colombian associates wanted to introduce him to God personally.
I've been given a second chance at life. This time I'm using it to do God's work. Is there anything else I can do?
We need a car, just for a day or two.
Done. It burns as much oil as it does gas.
Now, in Washington, D.C., John pulls up on the street.
You sure about this?
There's no one else I can trust.
John gets out of the driver's side and heads towards a gay bar. Inside, three glamorous drag queens are on stage. They're wearing sequined dresses and feather adornments. John walks through the flamboyant clientele, scanning the vibrant and colourful interior. He approaches the bar where Johnny Castiglione is working.
Hello, Johnny.
You. I need to talk to you right away.
They walk to the end of the bar.
I got one question for you. Was it your idea to hook me up with the village people here?
Well, you're safe, aren't you?
From the mob, yeah. I mean, no self-respecting wise guy would ever be caught dead in a joint like this. Well, look, do me just one favor. Don't let on that I'm straight, okay? I don't want to break any hearts or nothing.
Trust me. Do you remember when you told me if I ever need anything, I could come to you?
Yes.
Well, I need your help.
Boy, I mean, you need my help.
Right now.
You got it.
Come in.
Look, cover me for a few seconds. I'm going to help a friend of mine.
Who's he? He looks rough.
Please don't start.
Maybe you two need a moment alone.
We're fine, thank you.
Just an idea.
Kevin just worries about me. Don't ask.
Now in the car.
You want me to help you break into Cyrus?
Yeah.
What, are you shitting me? I thought you wanted me to help you move a sofa or something.
Pull over up ahead.
All right, look, I'm gonna help you out here. All we're gonna need is some tanks, a couple of rocket launchers, and a set of balls like the King of Bayonne.
All we need are these. I'll meet you back at his place.
He's handed him indigestion remedy tablets.
What, look like I got gas or something?
John heads towards the emergency entrance of a hospital. Now it's daytime, and Robert is sitting on a park bench, smoking a cigarette. A limo with blacked-out windows pulls up, and Robert discards his cigarette, picks up his coat, and climbs in the back. He joins two men, one of whom is Under-Secretary Daniel Harper.
Gentlemen.
You want to tell me what the hell's going on?
I'll have the situation contained in 24 hours.
Not good enough.
We have problems, they're solvable. First, we have to cancel that shipment.
That's not an option.
And what the hell do you propose we do with 10 tons of assault weaponry that's not supposed to exist, huh?
I am the eyes and ears of your world, gentlemen. And I am telling you there's too much heat.
You don't get it, do you? The money has changed hands. These are not the kind of people you cancel on!
Harper's colleague looks nervous.
Get those guns out of the country tonight or you're a dead man. How do you intend to contain the situation?
Kruger has to show up at Cyrus, and when he does, I'll be waiting.
Why would he risk that?
Because he needs to know what's on that disc. That's the only thing that'll clear him and the woman.
Fine. This better work. The disc, the girl, the guns. By dawn, they don't exist. Are we clear?
Yeah. Crystal.
The House Armed Services Committee has announced that 2 weeks from today, it will begin official hearings into the Cyrus scandal.
Sources tell us the committee
Perfect.
Intends to...
The place is crawling with reporters. We've got to keep a lid on this mess.
Listen, you do what I tell you to do, and by tomorrow you'll be chuckling about this in your kiss-ass country club. Oh, who's running this game room?
I am.
This is James Haggerty, head of security.
Good. We're going to keep everything nice and low profile.
You ever do any wet work?
Only on 3 different continents.
Yeah. Well, you want to impress me, Slick, do your fucking job. How many people can you bring in on this?
12. All experienced professionals. They'll do whatever it takes. Plus 20 more on the security force. They'll follow orders, but they're not part of the program.
Well, that's fine. My man is at the main entrance. Make sure he receives your full cooperation.
He's already dialed in. We've got every possible point of entry under surveillance, from the rooftop to the sewer system.
Well, this fucker's a ghost. Believe him, if he wants in, he'll get in. Now, where's he got to go to run this disc?
The central vault. No other terminal can access that program.
He wants to read the disc. There's only one way in.
Oh. That's outstanding, gentlemen.
I guess all we gotta do is sit back and wait for Mr. Kruger to come to us.
Johnny walks into Cyrus, dressed as a pizza delivery person, and is spotted by a guard.
Think you're going?
Oh, Shem, take it easy there. I got a delivery for Blevins, 14th floor.
We can't accept any unauthorized deliveries.
We can't accept any deliveries. Hey, just messing with you, man. Look, why don't you call Blevins, get him to authorize it? I got a pepperoni and cheese here. Molte bene.
Maybe you don't understand. This is a high security facility.
Maybe you don't understand, my friend. This is a Papa Genozzi's pizza, okay? And if Blevins doesn't get it while it's still hot, he gets two for free, which comes out of my pocket. I'm trying to save for a computer.
Search him.
Hey, get hands off me.
They frisk him.
Hey, listen. I got a bad heart and a very good lawyer, all right?
Shut up. He's clean.
Cheese and pepperoni.
When the guard turns to look at the pizza, Johnny slips the tablet into his mouth.
All right, pal, hit the road.
I said hit the road.
Johnny turns round, frothing at the mouth and convulsing violently. On a monitor, Robert sees him fall to the ground.
Hey, what the hell's going on down there?
Some pizza delivery guy's having a seizure.
Which one of you morons ordered the pizza?
This is all we need. Get him to the infirmary immediately and call an ambulance.
Two paramedics rush over with a trolley. Johnny's still trembling as they lift him onto it. He has a quick look up as they wheel him towards the metal detector. Meanwhile, Robert gets on the phone to Schiff, who's overseeing the loading of the weapons.
Yeah.
Hey, Garrett, how are we doing?
We should be on the road within an hour.
Good. They need to be rolling or I need to know why.
Yes, sir. All right, come on, guys. Let's move it.
An ambulance stops at a barrier.
They've been expecting you. The infirmary is straight through the loading dock.
The patient stable?
I'm not sure. You better hurry.
Thank you.
The guard raises the barrier, allowing John and Lee to pass. Then, dressed as paramedics, the pair pull a trolley out of the ambulance and head for a door. Robert glances up at a monitor as they pass in front of the camera, but doesn't notice anything out of the ordinary.
He looks stable. Let's give him some low O2.
Strapped to a trolley in the infirmary, Johnny unplugs some wires across his chest.
Hey. He's defibrillator! Oh, come on!
The paramedic forces a piece of plastic between his teeth, then pulls over a defibrillator.
Give me some gel.
She gives him a jolt.
Right this way. They're waiting for you.
Here we go again. Claire! All right, increase the voltage.
Johnny gasps for air.
Let's do it one more time.
Let's not. You, over there against the wall. Get down on the floor. Face the wall. Get on the floor.
Oh, my God, Terrorists!
You want terror? Huh? You want some freaking terror? You want some freaking terror? Get your ass up here. I'll jump start it. Here, tape them up. Okay, face the wall.
Lee takes the security guard's keys.
Keep the room secure. You think you can handle that?
Get out of here.
We got a problem.
What? What is it?
He's running the disc.
Shit!
That's impossible. Station one, any activity at your location?
All clear.
All clear my ass. He's in, he just didn't use the door. Come on, get your men down here now. Let's go!
Robert arrives at the outer door of the central vault with a team of fully armed men, then Haggerty leads them inside. They're faced with a combination lock at the inner door.
What? What are you doing?
No, I know this. We change it every week.
Screw that. Get out of the way.
Robert blows off the lock.
Go ahead, check it.
Bracing himself, Haggerty takes hold of the handle and pushes the door open. The team floods into the vault to find it empty.
Somebody talk to me.
He must be running the disc from a remote terminal somewhere in the building.
I thought you said he couldn't do that.
He can. Donahue designed this specifically, so no outside act.
Donahue is dead. And you're going to wish you were too. Unless you find out what is going on, and you find out now.
Holster your weapon.
Take a hike, Junior.
I said, holster your weapon.
Robert twists Haggerty's arm behind his back.
You know, some people take things for granted, like the ability to chew solid food.
I can find him.
Robert releases Haggerty.
How?
I can scan the terminals. I can eliminate them one by one. If he stays online, I'll nail him.
Then do it.
In Donahue's office.
How are we doing?
You were right about Donahue. He left himself a back door. But we still have to break his code. I figure we've got around 5 or 6 minutes until they trace us. Do you recognize any of this?
No, but we're getting warm. It's an accounting format.
Okay, stop me if I get lucky.
Robert eyes a plan of the building.
How we doing?
Eliminating low clearance programs. Okay, south wing is clean. 2 more to go.
I've got 2 federal investigators downstairs who want to talk.
Well, fine, go talk to them. Do what you gotta do, but get rid of them, okay?
You can't be seen here.
I won't be, just go.
He turns to Calderon.
This will be over in 10 minutes. I need a chopper on the roof ready to go, right?
Now, those are offshore banking deposits. UBS, that's United Bank of Syria.
$52 million. If it's an arms sale, that's a major one. Let's see who their buyer is.
An image of a man appears with a name.
Sergei Ivanovich Petrovsky. Who's that?
Bad news. He heads a cartel in the Russian mafia, selling drugs, guns, influence to some very unpleasant people.
The plan of the building is closing in on their location.
He's somewhere in the North Wing.
North Wing, get your men moving.
Let's go.
How much longer?
I don't know. There's 15 terminals running secure programs in there.
You got 5 minutes. You find them, you call me. Let's go.
Robert and Calderon head out.
There it is. Delivery date. Tonight, midnight. 1,000 units for delivery at Baltimore Harbor.
1,000 units of what?
An armed team is moving in on John.
1,000 EM guns.
Are they insane? If these things get offshore...
There will be a whole new era of world terrorism.
The computer operator pinpoints John's location in Donahue's office.
Got him. 25th floor, Donahue's office.
Scramble! Alpha team to the North Wing, now!
John becomes alarmed.
They're onto us. They're raising the goddamn disc.
He tries to force the disc from the machine, but the words, "You've just been erased," scroll across the screen as 2 armed guards burst into the room. Throwing loose to the floor, John shoots at the guards, then hurls a chair at one when he gets back to his feet. The guard keeps coming, so John grabs him and uses him as a human shield when elevator doors open and the armed team open fire. Pulling the pins on 2 of the guard's grenades, John kicks him into the elevator.
Come on!
John and Lee run clear of the explosion, but soon find themselves under fire from Haggerty in a corridor. John opens fire, then reloads.
I'll cover you. Meet me at the ambulance.
Oh no, John, I
can't.
As Lee makes a run for it, emergency screens begin to lower from the ceiling at various points along the hallway. She ducks under one, then looks back.
Lee, run!
She runs straight into Robert, who grabs her before exchanging fire with John. When the two men realize the screen divided and is bulletproof, Robert turns his gun on Lee.
You listen up, John! We're playing my rules now!
You mess with me and I'll slice her up and mail it back to you in little pieces, all right?
He gives her a blow to the face and hustles her through a door. Behind the glass screen, John is helpless to stop him. Spotting a sprinkler, John shoots it and sets off a fire alarm, which raises the screen.
This is not a drill. Please proceed to the nearest exit.
He gets to the roof in time to see Robert and Lee climbing aboard a helicopter, but Haggett is there, and a tussle with him prevents John from getting to the chopper before it lifts into the air. Lee looks down at him from a window. With a pained expression on his face, he watches the helicopter gaining altitude. Later, he and Johnny jump out of the ambulance next to a car in the woods.
In this car, I get to Baltimore in 40 minutes.
Johnny, you're not coming with me. I'm gonna drop you off.
Oh, no, please, don't give me the sidewalk alone shit.
You've already done enough. This is not your fight.
No, look, just indulge me for a minute, okay? If it weren't for you, my tongue would be hanging on Leo Canelli's trophy wall like a freaking trout. Look, you need me. My cousin Tony runs those docks. If your ship is there, he will find it.
John considers for a moment, then smiles and gives Johnny the nod to get into the car with him. John slides over to the passenger side, then with Johnny at the wheel, they set off. Set men are counting money.
You sure want him, Velotti?
Infantino didn't pay.
What do you mean he didn't pay? What did he say?
He said, tell that fat fuck Tony Two Toes I ain't gonna pay him another dime.
I know that voice, but it can't be him. Not unless he's a ghost.
Johnny steps out of the shadows.
Boo. Johnny C. I thought you got whacked.
Must have been some other guy.
Yeah. Some other guy right out Vincenzo Canelli, too.
Hey, Canelli's a piece of shit.
I got no love for Canelli either. But this time you went over the line, John.
I'm still here.
No. What you did was wrong.
What he did, got a drug deal and his poison off the streets.
Who's the tree trunk?
This is the guy that saved my ass. That's my cousin, Tony Two Toes. That Sally boy. And that little Mike. Your funeral was absolutely beautiful, man.
Listen, Canelli finds out he's still breathing.
Screw Canelli. We got bigger problems than that. Tell him.
There's a major arms deal going down. A U.S. contractor is selling out to international terrorists.
Mr. 60 Minutes. Tell me something I don't know.
It's going to happen tonight on your docks.
That I didn't know.
At the docks, a crate is being lowered onto a ship.
Avoid a lot of security. Expecting trouble?
I'm a Boy Scout. Always be prepared.
Is that why you brought her?
No, just think of her as an insurance policy. In case someone crashes the party.
Something you're not telling me?
Just a little bump in the carpet. Nothing for you to worry about. Relax, Sergei. You'll be out of here in 20 minutes.
What do I do with her?
Whatever you want. Once you're in international waters, the policy expires. Personally, I'd put a bullet in the head and throw her overboard.
Lee's tied to a chair.
It would be such a shame.
Don't even think about it.
Sergei gives her the back of his hand.
I think what I like and I do what I like. You'll soon learn about this.
Well, last crate's on its way. I'll leave you two lovebirds alone.
Lee looks pleadingly at Robert.
Garen.
Sergei holds up a glass.
Svidanya.
Robert leaves them alone. Meanwhile, John's walking along the dock.
This is Kruger. Get me Bella.
Start a trace on this.
Yes, sir.
Bella picks up the phone in his office.
John.
I've got the proof. Cyrus is selling weapons on a black market. And Daniel Harper's in on it.
Undersecretary of Defense Harper?
Yes. De Guerin is their facilitator. He's the mole. It all goes down tonight. Come and get me. Baltimore docks. Pier 57.
John throws his phone away.
John? John!
Meanwhile, a car is moving along the pier, away from the ship. It pulls up, and Robert jumps out, then climbs into the back of a parked van. Inside, men are sitting at a control station.
EMT report.
Range is clear. Not a creature is stirring.
Snipers are posted in elevated positions.
Clear on the south.
Quiet on the east.
All right, gentlemen, listen up. This is the last load. Keep your heads up and your assholes puckered. That's some of the bitches out there, I want them.
Johnny C and his associates walk up to a man at a gate.
Hey, sunshine, whoa!
Give me a sec, I want to talk to you.
This is a restricted area.
You're telling me. Let me ask you. What the hell are you doing here?
Excuse me? We're from the local 129, Sonny.
We heard you was loading a ship without the assistance of bona fide union labor. Say it ain't so.
Sir, we have a situation here.
You certainly do.
Stand by, we're coming to you.
While Johnny distracts Robert's guards, John's walking across a beam in the rafters of a warehouse.
What the hell is going on here?
Let me explain something to you, Sonny boy. Nothing moves off these docks without it don't get loaded by the union. I don't see no union people around here. You?
Gentlemen, this is a matter of national security. We'll clear this area immediately.
Are you threatening us?
Absolutely.
Climbing down from a rooftop, John disturbs some birds, alerting a couple of guards down below. Leaping with a somersault, he lands behind them and lays them out with a few swift blows to the body and head.
What the hell was that?
We got gunfire at the warehouse!
At the gate, Johnny and his men pull out weapons and use them to knock out the guards.
Nobody screws with the union.
When Sally cuts a wire leading to a camera, Robert loses his picture.
Check in. Someone's in. Talk to me, goddammit.
We have a security breach.
I'll check it out. Get that crate on the move.
Two men secure a crate before it's lifted off the top of a trailer parked on the pier. Meanwhile, Johnny whistles to John, who then beckons him and the others over. John moves out, keeping low and out of sight. After pausing to watch the empty trailer moving past Robert's surveillance truck, he smashes the window with his elbow and breaks into a warehouse. A green light moves across the warehouse as a sniper surveys the building with an EM gun, allowing him to see inside through a sight.
I've got movement southwest corner of the warehouse.
It's a cat.
It's nothing.
A cat passes by close to John.
Model. There they are. Commie bastards.
Well, actually, they're not communists anymore. They're a Federation of Independent Liberated States.
Don't make me hurt you, Mikey.
Quiet. Keep your eyes on those bad boys on that crane. Think I can hit that guy from here?
Sally points his gun at the crane.
Give it a rest, Sal. Look if you hit the floor if you fell on it.
The sniper spots John when he moves through the warehouse.
Got him. 30 yards out.
Fry the bastard.
Noticing the green light just in time, John jumps out of the way and the sniper lets rip with a barrage of shots. Visible as blue contours coming at John from all angles, the aluminum rounds penetrate the warehouse walls as if they were made of paper. A North Sniper opens fire. The explosion forced John to run straight into a piece of flaming wreckage. Johnny C is watching from outside.
Fuck me.
Okay. I think it's safe to say we got him.
He's toast.
I think we even got the roaches.
Yeah. Roy Soames, your recon, bring me back to good news. Ham team, you cover him.
Roger.
While one of the snipers begins lowering his cherry picker, inside the warehouse, John emerges from beneath a pile of debris. The door opens, and Royce and Soames walk in, scanning the devastated warehouse. With his lower half still trapped under the debris, John reaches for his gun, but it's jammed. The men draw nearer to John's position. S- spotting one of them, he throws the gun into the open. When Royce cautiously moves over and picks it up, a sniper looking through his X-ray scope sees a skeleton holding a shotgun.
Nice shotgun, asshole.
No!
Royce is sent flying across the warehouse.
Royce!
John strains as he tries to free himself while Soames draws nearer. Pulling on a metal bar that has skewered his leg, he releases it in time to use it to pin Soames to a collapsed beam. John picks up Soames' handgun as Schiff and Calderon enter the warehouse, armed with EM guns. Quickly, John begins breaking a hole into the wooden floor. While two men scan the warehouse for movement, John crawls under the floorboards, pushing aside a rat that gets in his way. Then, rolling under his back, John waits till dust falls from the boards directly above him before opening fire, perforating the men unfortunate enough to be standing on them at the time. John erupts through the wooden floorboard, sending splinters everywhere, then picks up Schiff and Calderon's EM guns. Turning them on Robert's reinforcements, he gives them a first-hand demonstration of their deadly power.
Schiff! Calderon!
John picks up a headset.
They missed.
Robert looks worried.
Johnny,
I'll be right out.
He gets to his feet.
Open fire!
As they bombard the warehouse, Sergei picks up a phone in the ship's cabin.
Отдать швартовый! Быстрее там!
Lee's managed to break the handle of the chair she's tied to.
It looks as if your friend has arrived.
I'll enjoy introducing him to you.
I doubt I'll have the pleasure. He has forced me to hasten our departure.
When an EM gun causes a large explosion outside the warehouse, Lee takes advantage of the distraction to pull one of her arms free and smash Sergei over the head with a nearby coffee pot. Then, giving him a swift kick to the head, she runs out of the cabin. Emerging from the obliterated warehouse, John walks slowly towards Robert and his men, firing two EM guns at anything that moves. After the surveillance truck is blown off the road, the sniper in the crane sets his sights on Sally down on the dock. However, his target is way ahead of him and gets a shot off first, hitting him in the arm. When the sniper falls onto the crane control, the trailer crashes to the ground. Meanwhile, Lee's on the run, jumping from the ship with bullets raining down on her. She hits the dock hard, then darts behind the crate. The pickup truck speeds towards John, carrying three men with machine guns. Aiming at its engine, he causes an explosion that blows through the air and safely over his head. Robert's got Lee.
God damn it! Now you are pissing me off! Drop the guns.
He's got a gun to her head.
Do it now.
Slowly and reluctantly, John does as he's told.
Thanks.
John!
Shut up! Take it out! Let's go! Now!
Leaving John on the ground with a bullet in his shoulder, Robert orders a crane operator to raise the trailer he and Lee are standing on into the air. John slowly staggers to his feet. Sergei spots him following the trailer and instructs his men to open fire. The explosions don't deter John, and he leaps towards the trailer, using his one good arm to hang on. As John begins to climb to the top of the trailer, and Sergei increases the size of his firing squad. A bulldozer shovel rises up, carrying Johnny, Sally, and the Hermione, who open fire on the Russians. Sergei and his men are cut down. Robert looks over the edge of the trailer and is greeted by John's fist. Thrown back, he drops his gun and is forced to engage John in unarmed combat. As their shifting weight causes the trailer to sway, Robert gives John a few blows with a crowbar. Holding onto a chain for support, Lou stretches towards a gun, but it's just out of her reach. As she edges closer, John somehow manages to gain the upper hand. A sudden shift in the trailer's weight causes Lou to fall over the side. John is forced to release Robert in order to grab onto her arm. She manages to scramble back onto the trailer, but Robert is closing in on the gun.
Here, grab the ladder.
Crawling on his hands and knees, Robert makes it to the weapon.
Hold on.
Say goodbye, John.
John jams the crowbar into the crane's mechanism.
Goodbye.
He yanks the bar, breaks the chain and sends the trailer plummeting to the ground. Still carrying John and Robert, Lee's left dangling from a ladder attached to the crane. A helicopter flies overhead, throwing a spotlight over the devastation of the docks. Shaken but still in one piece, John manages to climb to his feet and look up. On board the helicopter, Bella motions for the pilot to land. Robert's pinned to the ground by the door of the wrecked trailer. John eyes the police helicopter, then lifts the door to free Robert, but Robert pulls a gun on him. Unharmed, John takes the gun from him.
Drop the gun!
Raising his hands into the air, John gets to his feet and watches the cavalry arrive. Once every gun is aimed at a weary John, Bella emerges from the helicopter. He inspects the bloody figure standing before him, then scans the trailer load of EM guns that are now strewn all over the ground.
All right, get him out of here!
Yes, sir.
The armed men move forward, but John is surprised to see them run straight past him to Robert.
Thank you, John.
Confused, John watches the men lift Robert onto a stretcher and carry him to an ambulance.
Let's go!
John!
John turns to see Lee running towards him. They embrace tightly. They look at each other with sheer relief. Now it's daytime, and Undersecretary of Defense Daniel Harper emerges from a court with Robert by his side.
Mr. Undersecretary, how does it feel, a man of your stature indicted for treason?
Nothing to say at this time.
Marshal DeGaren, what about you?
I'm proud of what I've done.
You admit to treason?
I admit to patriotism. Our actions have put a stop to a secret alliance that this administration has had with some of our nation's worst enemies. The public deserves to know the truth. When we have our day in court, they will. That's all.
Yes, sir. What is your response?
John and Lee are watching them.
They could get away with this, couldn't they?
Moore takes the fall.
He nods.
You did well in there.
I couldn't have done it without you watching over me.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bella's there too, watching John and Lee with a beaming smile.
Pretty impressive speech. You ought to learn to keep your mouth shut in front of the press.
Doesn't matter anyway. She'll never go to trial without her testimony.
He eyes Lee walking with John. Watching them head towards the van, he steps towards the Undersecretary's black limousine. Without warning, the van is blown apart by an almighty explosion. While terrified members of the public jump for cover and camera crews hurry to capture the moment, a twisted grin flashes across Robert's face as he climbs into the limo. Beneath the van, a manhole cover slides shut. Meanwhile, in the limo, the Undersecretary seems nervous.
I'm not so convinced we should start again.
Why not? With this bitch gone, we can spin doctor ourselves cleaner than Mother Teresa.
What about people she's been in contact with? Her friends, her family?
Fuck her family, fuck her friends. I'll kill them, one by one. By next year, she won't even be a memory.
Robert, you never fail to amaze me.
Me? Thank you. But you, I gotta hand it to you, Danny boy. That was a brilliant piece of work you did back there.
What are you talking about?
The van. It was beautiful. It was clean, it was swift. You got hundreds of witnesses to say we were never near it. I like your style. Well, you remind me of me.
Wait a minute, I thought you set that up. What the hell's going on up there?
They're locked in. The driver's door opens and Johnny C steps out, taking off his chauffeur's uniform.
Hey!
The Undersecretary answers the phone.
Hello.
He looks at Robert.
It's for you.
Hesitantly, Robert puts the phone to his ear.
Yeah?
You've just been erased.
Looking through the window, Robert sees John standing outside. The limo is parked across railway tracks, and a train is approaching.
Oh my God!
The men scramble to break the glass of the car windows, the train plows straight into the limo, splitting it in two with a huge explosion. John stands watching with a cold, hard look of a professional, then smiles when Johnny waves farewell from his car as he drives away from the scene. Leaving the dissected limo in flames, John heads down an embankment to where Lee's waiting in a car. John climbs in and starts the car.
They caught a train.